15 years ago, Richard Florida wrote about the rise of the creative class and how it could help revitalize American cities. Now the urbanist is looking at another side of that in his new book called The New Urban Crisis. Richard Florida joins me via Skype. And Richard, how do you define this urban crisis? What is it a crisis of?
Since I wrote The Rise of the Creative Class now 15 years ago, we've had this remarkable urban revival. We've had, of course, epicentered in places like New York or Boston or San Francisco, but across the country and from Pittsburgh to Phoenix, we've seen the movement of the talented, the educated, the affluent, the young back from the suburbs to the center city. And in many ways, that's a good thing. It's rebuilt the urban center. It's brought money back to the urban center. It's led to this liveliness and flourishing of the so-called creative class. But on the other hand, in a growing and gaping number of cities and metropolitan areas around the country, housing has become increasingly unaffordable. And we've gotten a new kind of divide with affluence, not just concentrated in the city, but affluence concentrated in parts of the urban core and, of course, in parts of the suburbs, in areas like Scottsdale. Every metropolitan area has that. But we no longer have, you know, if under the old urban crisis, it was the middle class that fled the city and moved to the suburbs. Now what we're finding is across cities and across the country, across metro areas, the middle class neighborhoods that were the very platforms for economic mobility in the American dream are being eviscerated.
So in your mind, is this, at least in some way, the pendulum may be swinging too far in the other direction from what you wrote about in The Rise of the Creative Class?
I don't think so. I think that what the book points out is this clustering of talent, of innovation, of knowledge workers, of the creative class is what really generates economic growth. So one of the things the book says, this, it's not just technology, it's just not great companies, it's not just great research and science, it's the clustering of technology and knowledge and companies in great urban centers that drives growth. But that same clustering also drives deep divides in our cities and our society, because as these great things cluster in cities, it drives up land prices, it drives up real estate values, it drives up housing prices, and other groups get pushed out and separated. So the point of the book is not that we should stop the clustering of creativity, but that we should develop a new model of inclusive prosperity where many more people can benefit.
Well, how do you think cities then should be working to balance this revitalization and growth of creativity and just general growth versus people being displaced and income inequality, other kinds of inequality that can sometimes lead to?
You know, in Phoenix, I mean, Phoenix is doing pretty good. I mean, if Los Angeles is first on my new urban crisis index and New York is second and San Francisco is third, Phoenix is in the mid-20s. Now, in some areas, you mentioned income inequality. I do think Phoenix is in, you know, one of the top 10. It's one of the top 10 worst. But in generally speaking, your metro, your city still has time to address this because housing has been relatively affordable compared to many other places. The thing that has really dawned on me, and I think this has really dawned on me with this election, is our country is really divided. And, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. But because of that division between red and blue America, it's not like we're going to have a federal urban policy. And I think that's not just with Donald Trump's president. I think that would have happened. In fact, we didn't have much of a policy with President Obama as president. So cities and metro areas are going to have to do a lot of this on their own. And so what I think they have to do is, of course, continue to double down on building strong economies, continue to invest in those technology clusters, continue to become the kind of places talented and innovative people want to live, all the things that you've been doing in Phoenix and many other cities have been doing. But at the same time, we've got to really address this gaping inequality and this great divide. So I think a couple things. One, we have to just build more housing, especially in the urban center. Two, we have to really double down and build more affordable housing. Third, and I think this is a really big thing in a place like Phoenix, a more spread out metropolitan area, we've got to invest in transit. We've got to connect our outlying areas to our urban cores so people can get around without depending on the car. And we have to make a real commitment to upgrading the more than 45% of Americans work in low-wage, contingent, highly precarious, very poorly paying service jobs. And we have to make an effort to make those jobs pay more. But the issue is that help's not going to come from the federal government. That's going to be as a result of local initiative and public-private partnership and business and philanthropy and local government partnering to build their own cities and metros better and more inclusively.
Do you see this as a matter of cities sort of having to go it alone? Do you think there could be relationships between cities and the states in which they are, or maybe between, you know, different cities within a metro area, like some of the cities within the Phoenix metro area, you know, a few of those cities is getting together and say, okay, here's what we're going to do?
I think that it's really going to have to be cities and suburbs in a metro area getting together and figuring out how to govern and grow themselves. And I've come to the realization that there is no one size fits all. Certain people like to live in a dense urban environment and want to take transit to work and live in a condominium or a loft apartment. Others of us want to live in a suburb with a patch of backyard and a little bit more spread out and drive a car. Some of us are more red in our political inclinations, more conservative, and some of us more liberal. And our country is so divided because we don't want the other side telling us what to do. Well, if we could devolve power and move power out of Washington and hand it back to our states and cities and say, you know what? All the money you give to Washington, you can have that back, and you can build the kind of lifestyle and the kind of community. If you want to build a dense transit-served community, do that. If you want to live in a suburb, do this. If you need more roads, do that. If you want more transit, go that way. And we're not going to dictate how you have to live. I think that would go a long way to not only be an economically a better path, but I think it would overcome the fear that people have on one side of the aisle or another that the other side is going to impose their view on them.
Do you think that by having cities, and in some cases maybe regions, sort of decide more of these types of things for themselves, does that help, do you think, in terms of trying to alleviate some of the problems that cities have? Does a decentralized system like that really help a city address those issues?
Well, I think the problems of the Phoenix Metro, which is creating jobs, which is attracting people, which has somewhat affordable housing, are very different than the problems of Detroit. So I think the problems of our cities in this new urban crisis and our metro areas are very different. And what you need to do in those places is very different. So I think giving cities and communities and metros the revenues and the tools they need to build themselves the way they need to, that is really the way to move our economy forward.
Richard Florida is an urbanist and the author of the best-selling book, The Rise of the Creative Class. His new book is called The New Urban Crisis. Richard, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you.